Rabbi said, before we begin, I just want to, first of all, just reflect on the Shabbos a little bit, tell you the following thing. Someone came here, today's Monday, right? Yesterday, to Yeshiva. He happened to have been in the hotel for Shabbos. I don't know if you noticed, there was an American that was in the hotel. I don't know who, I'm not sure, I think I might know who he is, but he's not like, never learned to this Yeshiva or anything like that. He came to Yeshiva to just tell me how amazing the Shabbos was. And how he was like, so he said to me, I don't know, again, I don't know who he is. I don't know in capacity. He says, I've been to a lot of these types of Shabbosim, and I've never seen anything like this before. Yitzi wants to clap. So everyone can clap, because Yitzi wants us to clap. He said that the most amazing thing about the Shabbos is about how everyone was like, you're welcome. It's so like, the whole Shabbos is centered around Reb David. And how beautiful it was, and how all the Bachrim were like, everyone was talking about Reb David, and how the Rabbein were talking about Reb David, and the Shabbos was a Shabbos of Roimimus, and that's what everyone keeps talking about, we keep on repeating that it was that Shabbos. Because I think that that's the reason, because it wasn't like about the hotel, it wasn't about, you know, the chill, it was about, you know, getting opportunity to enjoy a Shabbos with a Gadol Hadar, and to be in the Mechitzas of a Gadol Hadar, and that was really the focus. And that's such an, and it changes the whole thing. And I can tell, the Olam, you know, we speak about the Olam doing well, and the Olam learning a lot. And I could also tell from the fact that the Olam is, came back from the Shabbos. A lot of times people come back from the Shabbos, it's a great Shabbos, but there's like a certain lull in the activity in the Beis Medrash, because they're like, okay, you know, it's like you have to get back into things. I don't feel like anyone's getting back into things. I think that it's like seamless almost, because Shabbos was also a Shabbos of Roimimus. It's a Shabbos of being in the zone, not getting out of the zone. Sometimes people, they want to like, you know, it's like an escape. I think it was just an energy boost, and that Shabbos was really, and it's really helping us, and I think it's an amazing thing. And the Olam deserves the Yashar Koach for that, for being, you know, for really putting themselves into it and really coming together. And the singing was beautiful, the learning was beautiful, everything about the Shabbos was amazing. So I want to give you all the Yashar Koach. The whole idea of having questions and answers is something which also seemed to be very popular. The Chazal say, Godol Shimushoy Yoyser Milimudo, is actually, perhaps we even got more from the time when we asked Reb David questions about Hashkafa, which is more like Shimush Tamid Chachamim, or being able to like spend time with him, than just learning from him. And there has been a request for more like types of opportunities for Hashkafa. I try very hard not to bother Reb David. I don't know if you understand like what a tremendous opportunity it was to be able to have that type of time with Reb David, which people don't get. It's not like you could just call up a Gadol and say, you know, I want to go spend, you know, an hour with you and just schmooze about whatever's on my mind, or want to speak with you in learning for an hour. It's not the type of thing that person can just get that easily. I think so many times before I call Reb David, because I know how much the responsibility he has, how much is on his shoulders, and how much he's dealing with on so many different, in so many different arenas and so many different levels. You know, his yeshiva, which is itself a major, major burden, the huge yeshiva, the fact that he's so involved in what's happening all over Yerushalayim. He has many yeshivas, including ours, where, you know, if there are things that happen in the yeshiva that people approach him. So there's so many different ways that Reb David is being pulled in so many different directions. So to be able to get time to actually speak to an Adam Gadol like Reb David like this was a major, major opportunity. And it's something which we would want to be able to stay in our memory. Those of us that were present by the question answers, I think it's something which you would want to like be able to impress in your memory and to really engrave it. And what we're trying to chazer it is for those of you that were there, that it can be something that can stay with you and make sure that it's not, it wasn't just like a moment which we enjoyed, but it's something that we can always remember and keep with us. So that's what we're going to try to go over, these different questions that we discussed. If people have more questions they would like to ask, So you know that there's a little box where we have the answers to the Chumash questions. If someone wants to drop in that box some Hashkafa questions, I don't envision that we're going to get to Reb David again soon. So if there's a very strong request, then maybe perhaps we could try to work something out. But Reb Yaakov Hillel, who's also an Adam Gadol, a Gavra Rabba, has offered to do a question answer, perhaps on a Friday night, one of these upcoming weeks. If anyone wants, we could go to Reb Yaakov Hillel. We'll have the questions pre-arranged beforehand. Reb David, people just throw out questions, and I want to apologize now if anyone didn't get their question asked, so if they feel like I couldn't help them get their question across, it was definitely not intentional. I was trying very hard to get that everyone should be able to ask at least one question. That's what I was trying to do. But if a person has a question that they want to be asked in any arena, you do not have to write your name on the question. You can just drop the question in the question box, and we'll try to get to those questions. When we sit with Reb Yaakov Hillel, it'll be obviously posted when we're going to do that. So that is what we're going to do. I'd like to now speak for a few moments about some of the questions. We have a list here of pretty much all of the questions, almost all of the questions. If anyone has anything that they want to clarify or want to chime in or add or question, you're welcome to do that. This is the open forum. Okay, question number one was about chinuch. Should a person learn all different topics or focus on one particular topic in school, out of yeshiva, these types of things? A person has certain things that has weaknesses and strengths. Should he focus on his strengths, or should he work on his weaknesses? There's certain things that people have a certain tendency towards. This question was asked particularly when it comes to chinuch with children. Right. So, and then it was spoken about us in yeshiva. So, the yeshiva broke down the question, which, if you notice the way the yeshiva's mind works, it's very, very systematic. And he was going through everything it's very orderly. And when he's talking about with children in particular, he was saying that the first thing you have to do is you may have to make sure that the children know what they're learning in school. And if the children know what they're learning in school, and if a father has time to learn with his children, so he should learn with them what they're learning in school. A father should not tell his kid just to learn. And there are situations like that, where a father himself doesn't feel like he has the time, or he doesn't feel like he's capable of teaching his kids. He just tells them, you learn, and that's it. It's not going to work. Either has to hire his child to malamed, or of course, the preferred method is for a father to learn himself with his son. Now, what should you learn with him? You should learn with him what he's learning in school. If you see that he's mastered that, it would be wonderful for you to learn something else, another limit. It's a tremendous thing. Whatever he's up to, don't try to push him too far. If he's up to Mishnah, learn Mishnah. If he's up to Gemara, learn Gemara. Whatever it might be, in order to be able to learn with your child something, in order to supplement what he's learning in school. Now, as far as where we're at in our life, so should a person learn something that he's strong at or weak at? So first of all, a person should make sure that whatever he's learning does not come al cheshbin, what is learning the sidrei yeshiva. A person has like a thing he likes to learn, whatever it might be, wants to learn navi. Okay, it's a very nice thing, it's a good thing, but it shouldn't be al cheshbin hayeshiva. I mean, navi has its controversy in general, but the yeshiva didn't mention navi. But the point is that when a person has something that he's learning, and he should make sure that he is spending enough time on the topic that is part of the Sidrei HaYeshiva. What's enough time? That might depend on your Rebbe. Yes, Yosef.
What Rebbe said that Navi has its own things that are controversial?
Right. Well, so Reb David didn't speak about that. Well, you could ask that to Reb Yaakov Hillel if you want. Okay. But a person should make sure that, and after he's doing that, then a person can learn, other things outside of Seder if there are things that he wants to learn. Now, what the Reshiva discussed is the following thing. This is the Nakuda, the big Nakuda, which I think is important for us to clarify. He spoke about that when a person, that he's very much in favor of a person learning things that you have a drawing to. A person's drawn to halacha. He likes to learn halacha. A person likes to learn bekiyas. A person likes to learn chumash. Whatever it is a person is drawn to. In general, the Reshiva says it's a good thing for a person to embrace that. And to go with that, there is a concept called person learning washali by chafetz. However, he cannot do it at the expense of the yeshiva. Another thing, a person likes to learn late at night. He likes to learn. He likes the quiet of late at night. That's his type of thing. Whatever it might be, like his times. He says, I'll learn later at night. I'll daven later in the morning. What do I have to daven so early in the morning for? I learn halacha seder when I want to learn halacha seder, when it works for me. And so the Rashiva said very clearly that on the one hand, I'm very much in favor of that. However, it should not be at the expense of the yeshiva. So for example, Bein Hazmanim, do what works for you. Whatever. Now, obviously, a person has to keep in consideration halacha. If he's going to stay up till who knows what time late at night, not daven, you know, with bizman, that's the Rashi was not talking about that. But keeping halacha in consideration, do what works for you, Ben Azman. But during the Zman, a person has to have consideration for the yeshiva. And I think it's important to clarify what the yeshiva means. He does not mean that, okay, so you're telling me that I'm not important, and even though it's not good for me, I have to do this because for everyone else it's good. I don't think that's what the yeshiva means. The yeshiva means that part of being a healthy individual is thinking about others. And part of your steiging in yeshiva is that I'm including other people into what is important to me. And if that's not a value, so then there's something warped about who you're becoming. If all I care about is, listen, all I care about is me and everyone else is irrelevant, and that's what's, then there's something unhealthy about the growth that's happening. We don't just grow in Torah. We have to grow as a Ben Torah. And a Ben Torah has other people in his life. He's part of a yeshiva. There's people that are with him. And that has to be part of my consideration. And that's going to be part of our growth. So when we grow in a yeshiva, so we do it in a way that is going to be considerate of others. Now, if a person can grow in yeshiva in a way that his rebbeim and his mashkiach feel like it's not going to be a steer to the yeshiva somehow, if he could be in some way, you know, something can be done out of the norm, but it's not going to in any way affect adversely, negatively, not affect anyone else, then he can do it. But otherwise, he has to balance, very important to balance, the fact that you are part of a larger picture and that you can't negatively affect other people. I think that basically covers the first question.
The next question was a lot. Today it's become very popularized, Breslov and Chassidus and the Svarim of Breslov. And this was an opportunity for the Rosh Yeshiva to clarify what it is that Chassidus is similar to us and what about it is different. He said that essentially Chassidus had a different Derech Avoda way back when, but now for the most part, Chassidim focus on learning just like Litvish yeshivas focus on learning. The Rosh Yeshiva also said that the Svarim of Chassidus essentially are Svarim that are on par and can be mixed and matched with Litvish Svarim, like the Svas Emes and Reb Tzadok, that are clarifying various sugyas. So this is something I would like to explain, that a little bit of background. The Baal Shem Tov really was somebody who felt there was a need to make Pnimius HaTorah, the secrets of the Torah, more popularized and more available to the masses. And what happened was that there was a lot in the base medrash of the Hasidim, there's a lot of explanation of the deeper parts of the Torah. That's of value to any Yid, no matter whether or not they're Litvish or Hasidish. If they look into the Sifrei Hasidus, they'll end up getting tremendous clarity in those areas, what some people call Machshava. And the Rosh Yeshiva was emphatic on the fact that for those Svarim, in the general Chassidus, will not lead to any type of change in someone's Derech Avodah. A person will still be focused on learning with learning those Svarim. The Rosh Yeshiva then went on to Breslov Svarim and the Breslov Derech Avodah, and he talked about the difference between living with Seichel, living with intellect as what governs what's going on in your life, and living as an emotional being, that the emotions themselves are what rule over the person. And the Rosh Yeshiva was also saying that in the Breslov Svarim, this derech that they have is also part of their Svarim. Unlike other Sifrei Chassidus, that when you're learning them, it's just Divrei Torah, in Breslov it's also a certain mahalach in Avodas Hashem.
Now, I want to clarify this for a moment. There are two different things here which I think are important for us to differentiate between. One thing is a person who feels that there's something that he can gain from Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, and then there's the Breslov movement. Those are two different things. The Breslov, what the Reshiva was emphasizing very clearly is becoming part of the Breslov movement, which would mean person putting on payas and becoming a Breslov chassid, is something which we are misnaget to b'chol toikif, which means that we are very against. If a person would want to put on payas and become a Belzer chassid, we're not misnaget b'chol toikif. If a person wants to put on payas and become a ger chassid, we're not misnaget b'chol toikif. If a person puts on payas and wants to become a Breslov chassid, what? A Breslov chassid, we are misnaget b'chol toikif. Why? Because the Breslov chassidus, what the chassidus has become, and I clarify this with the Rosh Yeshiva, he said, I'm not sure that that's what Rabbi Nachman wanted it to become. What the Breslov chassidus has become is a shift away from learning towards a tremendous amount of focus on emotion and feelings and experience. So while all the other chassidus, we are still, you know, on par with them in what we're doing in our day. We have first Seder Gemara, second Seder Gemara, night Seder Gemara. We understand Gemara is the Iker and all of that. When it comes to what today the Breslov movement has become, that is not in sync with what we are doing. That does not mean that if a person feels that he has something to be inspired by a thought from Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, that makes it tummy, and that like Rabbi Nachman is out of bounds. It does not mean that. The Rosh Yeshiva was not saying that. He was talking about the Breslov being a part of Breslov. And he said the problem with learning Breslov Svarim is because it's going to suck you into their way of Avodas Hashem, which is not our way of Avodas Hashem. We are people that understand the importance of sitting and learning Gemara and the importance of having that seichel, the idea of the seichel, which is really refined by the Gemara. However, if there are words of inspiration that a person gets from Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, which you can find in many of the mashpiim and tzaddikim and whatever it might be over the generations, that they have found something inspiring for Rabbi Nachman, Rosh Yeshiva wasn't saying that there's like anything wrong with that. So we have to differentiate between becoming Breslov and saying that I feel like I get inspired from like the teachings of Rabbi Nachman. Those are different things. Now, as far as learning the Svarim of Breslov, there's a very big danger there. We're not talking about learning the Svarim. The danger is of a person getting sucked into that hashkafa and to that lifestyle. Yes.
What about Chabad?
So it's a very good question. The Rosh Yeshiva didn't speak about Chabad. It's very possible that there are similarities. There could be very strong similarities to that. There are very possibly things that we can... Rosh Yeshiva didn't speak about it. But it's very possibly things that we can gain from Chabad, from the Chassidus, and even from the previous Rebbe. But for a person to become Chabad, the Rosh Yeshiva didn't give that as an example of one of the things that we would not be misnaget to, yes, be misnaget to. I think we're going to have to leave that open. We could maybe ask that to Rav Yaakov Hillel if you want.
I highly suggest to person that's the Baal or Chabad to switch over to Yiddish regular.
I think it's a complicated question. I think it's a very complicated question. Person is a part of something, and to tear someone out of something is different than a person going into something. I think it's complicated. I don't know if I could answer that question 100%. I think it might depend on, there's many different ramifications. You know, I would say the following thing, just to get clear. I don't advocate people growing long payas, but if someone has long payas, I wouldn't advocate them cutting them off. So it's not exactly identical, but if someone has he's a part of a family and there, you know, I don't, it's complicated. It needs, every situation needs its to be dealt with on an individual basis.
But if they're not learning the regular, Tamaras and stuff,
Right, so Reb David didn't talk about that. We're talking about becoming, getting sucked into it, getting pulled in. If someone's already a part of something, there's many considerations. I don't think that anyone would call Breslov apikorsis. I shouldn't say no one, but I think that most Lubavitch, again, everything is, it depends on the situation, depends on what your family, you know, what exactly your family is doing and how it's affecting them, and you know, it's every situation really has to be dealt with as an individual basis. And if someone has that shaila, you could go to Reb Dov and speak to him about it. Yeah.
All Breslov Sfarim, or just like put them around.
Look, there's all Breslov Sfarim, or particularly Likutei Maran. It's very hard to differentiate between them, and it's a slippery slope, and it's a dangerous thing, which Rav Shiva is saying that a person should stay away from. Okay. Now, again, if there are things from Rabbi Nachman that a person feels that he got inspiration from, so that's not what we're talking about. There have been people that I clarified with Reb David. There have been people who have been able to learn Breslov Sfarim and not get pulled in, but it's a dangerous thing to do, and your person shouldn't necessarily be looking to do that. If again, hopefully we are supplying enough svarim that we can get inspiration from. A person says, "I'm looking for something to give me that type of inspiration." The mashkiach can give you.
Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem.
Rashiva mentioned that getting inspired by this stuff, it feels good in the here and now, but in the long run, by building the foundation of the house, you're building a weak foundation,
right.
And it's going to collapse.
Right.
Is that in regards to just getting into Breslov, or even just hearing of art?
So I clarified this with the Rosh Hashiva, talking about that, you know, about a lot of the feelings and just the Rosh Hashiva said, for sure, I spoke about it in this and afterwards, for sure we need to have these types of, in other words, a person will see our Kabbalah Shabbos Friday night and Breslov Kabbalah Shabbos this past Friday night, and they would say, okay, you're just as crazy as they are. Someone might say that. The difference is, this is important, the difference is that we understand that is just something as like in order to be able to allow us to enhance our learning and to be able to build our, you know, our foundation. We're not seeing that as the foundation. So if a person understands that the foundation is the Gemara Rashi, is the Yisoid of Yiddishkeit as being part of the Olam Yeshivas and all that, and they're adding a little bit of the inspiration or the feeling, the emotionalism, the experience, all those words, adding that to your foundation is fine, but trying to make that into a foundation is not okay.
I just think that we had the opportunity where the Rosh Yeshiva clarified this with, like, say, a musical Havdalah, that within the halakhic framework, the Rosh Yeshiva said, if it does something for you, then it's worthwhile. And the idea being that Havdalah is something sikhli. It's something you have to do. And if you do it in a way that speaks to you, it'll be a more elevated experience of something that's part of your regular Avodas Hashem. It's not something detached. And now it's more carved to your lathe.
Rosh Hashiva said he doesn't relate to it. It doesn't do it for him. But if it does it for you, then great. Doesn't have a problem with that. Problem is where our shkafas are changing and we're losing what's the ikur, what's not. There's a lot more to do, so we can move on.
Okay.
The next one to you, I think.
Okay. The next one, the Rosh Hashiva went into a very contemporary issue, the issue of attention deficit medicine. The Rosh Hashiva held that if somebody is not able to learn, and today we have the ability to take certain types of medication that could give us an opportunity to focus better. He held that that is a mode of hishtadlus, that is something that is incumbent on a person to do because he has an opportunity to be able to learn well with this medicine. However, the Rosh Yeshiva did say that if a person has other reasons why he doesn't want to take this, perhaps he's worried about long-term effects. Or another one is that he won't even accomplish his goal because of certain side effects that he's facing. So then that leaves the realm of hishtadlus, and he no longer should necessarily use this avenue. I did hear a question coming up today, and there's... he's not mechuyev, meaning it's not in the realm of hishtadlus. He's not chayev to do such a thing. It's up to him. So now there's another... Some people were asking that according to this, if somebody had no attention issue, that maybe they should just use medications to get into a higher zone and learn Rabbi Akiva Eger's. And I don't believe that that's what the Rosh Yeshiva meant. I can't tell you he said it explicitly, but I'm positive that's not what he meant. What he meant is that just like I have an inhaler for my asthma and it gets me to regular breathing, even though it's a steroid, there's a mode of hishtadlus to go to normal functionality. And when medicine today can allow you to have normal functionality, it's a mode of hishtadlus to try to get there in any way a person can.
Yeah. Any questions about that?
What did you discuss about anti-anxiety and antidepressants?
Did he get back into that?
I don't remember.
I don't think he got back. No, he did. He said that they were
Oh, right. The Rosh Yeshiva did mention that medicines that are addictive are dangerous, and therefore a person should go to the nth degree to work out various types of issues of anxiety and other issues in a way that's non-medical in order to avoid being stuck with addictive medication. But if at the end there's no choice, then of course a person can use that mode as well.
He said that the Rosh Yeshiva said that that there are two types of Bittul Torah. There's actually being the Bittul Torah, and then there's also not taking the pills. So if somebody's worried for the long term effect of the pills, is that called Bittul Torah, that he's not taking the pills because of the long term, he's being the Bittul Torah?
So first, I just clarify what Baruch just said. The Rosh Yeshiva was saying that if a person's not focusing well, it's also Bittul Torah. Bittul Torah doesn't just mean that you're not learning. If you're not learning as well as you could be learning. So therefore, it said the Rosh Yeshiva, if a person can learn better, clearer, by taking whatever type of medication, so then he should do that. And that's going to be part of his hishtadlus. They shouldn't be over Bittul Torah. The Rosh Yeshiva seemed to be saying it's part of your chavis hishtadlus. That is that you're obligated to do that. Unless you're afraid of the long-term results. If a person is afraid of, who knows, maybe, you know, we don't know what the, you know, I'll give you an example. There's some of the medications that they have today are relatively new. They're not on the market for 50 years. So do we know for sure what it's going to, we don't know for sure. If a person's like, I'm nervous about what's going to happen in 30 years from now to my brain. So then if a person, and that's really his concern, so then it's not included in the shtadlus. He's not mechuyev, the Rosh Yeshiva said. And also if a person says, it doesn't make me feel good. Rosh Yeshiva said, if it's going to make you feel like you can't learn, so then a person has to feel good in order to be able to learn. If you're not going to be able to learn, then it's not part of your chavis hashtadlus.
What if you could learn? It's just, it doesn't make you feel good. Let's say your learning goes up 100%.
Right, so that's very interesting. That Rosh Yeshiva didn't really, he said it's not part of your chavis hashtadlus if you're not going to be able to learn well. He might tell you that you eventually won't be able to learn well, because if you're not going to be in a good place, so then you have to be, but one that he didn't say. So I can't tell you. I was wondering the same thing. Yeah.
And it's only in terms, like not thinking like, let's say, antidepressants, it's only in terms of physical addiction?
No, I don't think he meant only a physical addiction. He meant because a person's going to become dependent on it. He didn't, I don't know if he meant addicted. You're going to become dependent on it, and you're going to have a very hard time going off it. Now, he did stress, and I think it's important, if a person needs it, he should take it. He just says you should try to work it out with therapy, I think is what he said. You should try to work it out, and if you can't, then take it. But it shouldn't be something that people should jump to right away. Let me just get on a pill, because once you're on it, it's going to be very hard to get off it. The next question is a question about emunah. I don't remember the exact nature of the question. Does anyone here ask the question? How do you get Emuna these days? So it was a pretty broad question about Emuna. And the Rashiva, I think, again, broke it down systematically. And he said, let's talk about it. There's two different types of Emuna. There's one type of Emuna that he said over from Reb Shach B'Shem,
B'Shem Reb Chaim,
which is, Emuna is where Seichel ends, Emuna begins. That is, you're talking about an Emuna on things that are beyond us. And those things, Ataka, that's a very hard diagram of Emuna. I think that's what she was trying to say. It wasn't 100% clear where he was going with that. Then there's an Emuna, which is Emuna Pshuta. Emuna Pshuta, aside from meaning, like it's simple, it's simple. What I mean is that it's like an easy Emuna. It's not a hard Emuna to get. And that's an Emuna that everyone is very easy for us to attain. I think he really wanted to focus on that Emuna. And that Emuna, the Rashiva spoke about the Sefer Derech Hashem.
Yeah, also
right, the story of the Chaim. He spoke about the Sefer Derech Hashem. The Rashiva encouraged us to be doing the Sefer Derech Hashem. And Bez Hashem, Beli Neder, I do plan on starting it. It's going to take me some time to prepare because it's not an easy Sefer. It's a very, very important Sefer, but it's not easy at all. I was talking to Rabbi Wagshel about it afterwards, coming up with ways that we're going to do it. I don't see myself being able to start Derech Hashem until after Pesach, because it's going to take me that long to start preparing. I hope it's Yat Dishmaya. And that also is going to mean that I'm going to have to curtail our Tanya Shir. So we're going to probably do one or two more Tanyas, and then I'm assuming that we're going to have to stop, just because there's just so much time in my day. And she wants to do Derech Hashem. That's what it means. So when the time comes, that's what we're going to have to do. But let's get back to it. So the Rashi was saying the following thing. He said over a story of the Reb Chaim. This is a very important story and somewhat famous story, and it segues into what Rabbi Chanan said. The story of the Reb Chaim was that there's a Talmud from the Voloshin Yeshiva. Reb Chaim Brisker was the Rashi in Voloshin, and he met a Talmud. I think he wasn't wearing a yarmulke. And Reb Chaim said to him, "Are you still Shem Mitaru Mitzvahs?" And the Talmud said to him, "Rebbe, I have to be honest, I'm not. But I have a lot of questions, and if you could answer my questions, I give you my word right now, I'll be mekabel to the Shem Torah mitzvahs." Because his questions are really bothering me. Reb Chaim asked him the following thing: did these questions start bothering you before you stopped putting on tefillin and keeping Shabbos, or afterwards? When did the questions go into your head? So he said, the questions really came afterwards. So Reb Chaim said, "Okay. So let me explain to you." He said, "What happened over here is your Yetzer Tov started giving you a guilt trip. So making you feel bad. Like, what's going to be? You're not putting on tefillin. And what about Olam Haba? And what about Schar V'Oinesh? And what about all these things?" And your Yetzer Hara came with tirutzim, answers. "Yeah, but I'm not putting on tefillin. Yeah, but I have questions on my tefillin or on my Yiddishkeit or on my things." So really, your questions are really answers. I have answers to questions. I don't have answers to answers. So all of these questions are really answers. And Rabbi Chanan said that's the way to understand why people have struggles in Emuna. He asked the question, how could it be you expect a 13-year-old boy to be able to understand what Aristotle didn't come to a realization? Now Aristotle, the Rambam writes, was like one level below Nevuah. That's how brilliant Aristotle was. Now in Hanami, the Goyin said Aristotle knew Hashem and intended on going against him. But the Rabbi Chanan is saying, like, how can you expect a 13-year-old kid to understand Emuna if Aristotle wasn't there? He says, it's very simple. If a person wants to live a life without restrictions, so then it's hard for him to accept the clear facts, because because Yiddishkeit brings restrictions. It brings obligations, responsibilities. So people are, they're pulled away. And that doesn't allow him to see things clearly. And really, Emuna is pshuta. It's very simple. It's simple to have Emuna. The way to have Emuna is, the more a person is living a life of restrictions, of self-discipline and self-control, so then the easier it is for him to have Emuna. So I think that's the answer, Moshe. I don't know if it was clear to you at the time. I think the answer is, the more a person is prepared to accept upon himself the restrictions, the person feels like, I want to be free. Emuna is going to be a big problem for him, like that Talmud and Volozhin. But if a person says, okay, I understand that my life, I have to be able to hold back and restrict myself, so then Emuna will come naturally. Number five.
Okay, now this is a very important point. Here, the question was discussing the implications that our generation is a generation that's bringing Mashiach, and that is the merit of our generation. Rav David started off by saying that the reason why we're the generation of Mashiach, at least according to the way Rav Chaim Kanievsky is always talking about Mashiach, is simply put, first and foremost at least, because it's Zmano. There are two ways Mashiach could come. Mashiach could come early, and if it comes early, it's because of our merit. However, if Mashiach comes later, at the right time, it's going to come no matter what. And he says, Rav Chaim Kanievsky holds that we're in the Zman of Mashiach right now, and therefore his whole way of constantly talking about Mashiach, anticipating Mashiach, is because whether we deserve it or not, it should be coming right now. The Rosh Yeshiva then added, though, it is possible that because of all of the nisyonos that we're facing today, that our door is in fact greater, and we've discussed this in Yeshiva many, many times. But the Rosh Yeshiva said that the focus of our Tzipis L'Yeshua today is to know that this is when Mashiach's actually supposed to come. If it's Be'ito, which is Bismano, which is today, and not Achishena, which is to come earlier. Mashiach's not coming earlier anymore. This is already the time that would be fit for Mashiach Tzidkenu to be coming.
Even though, as the Mashkiach said, the Rosh Yeshiva did say that it's possible that we are, because of our Nisyonos, in fact, a better generation. Okay, we're going to move on a little quicker. The Rosh Yeshiva spoke about politics, B'nei Chutz La'aretz, B'nei Eretz Yisrael, and he said emphatically they should not be, politics should not be spilled over to America. The Novominsky Rebbe also said that in America, so the American Gedolim are saying that, the Eretz Yisrael Gedolim are saying that, we don't have to mix politics, and whatever's going on over here, it's very hard for people in America to understand the politics here. It's very hard for people in Eretz Yisrael to understand the politics in America. So there's no reason, Baruch Hashem, Eretz Yisrael has its manhigim, America has its manhigim, and it should stay separate. As far as votes are concerned, the Rosh Yeshiva just want to make it clear that there's a very clear threat here of Yeshiva Bachram being enlisted to the army. We're not looking to get involved in the politics. It's not a question of politics. This is just a question of keeping people out of the army. So if we're asking for people to support the voting of taking care of the main question, which is the question of the draft, that isn't part of the politics. Then people can talk about politics in Eretz Yisrael.
Take 2 points about learning. Rosh Yeshiva was talking about the concept of Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machkim, that Eretz Yisrael makes you wiser. Rosh Yeshiva said, simply put, is because of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Being in a place of Kedusha makes you wiser. The next point that the Rosh Yeshiva talked about in terms of learning was getting a Geshmak. This we've heard many times from the Rosh Yeshiva, that learning is objectively Geshmak in the eyes of the Rosh Yeshiva. It's something that should be Geshmak. If it's not Geshmak, there's something external that's stopping it. The Rosh Yeshiva told a story of one of his Talmidim who told him that he just can't get the Geshmak in learning that he would like to. And the Rosh Yeshiva asked him, he said, tell me something, do you get a Geshmak in just the chill, the leitzanus, the bittel zman, the hak? And he said, yes, I do. So he said, well, the Vilna Gaon talks about that there's a tremendous koach of bittel Torah in leitzanus and all these things that grows on a person to the extent where it takes away Geshmak in learning. If a person would work on that, so then the Geshmak would come. And this is in general a model that the Rosh Yeshiva is setting up for us, which is a lot of times we think our problem is the learning. It could be something external in our lives that we're doing that's impeding us from entering the world of Torah in all of its Geshmak.
The Rosh Yeshiva wasn't even talking about Averis. Averis is for sure a major problem. He's even saying just the Leitzanus, Bittel Zman, a person just liking the chill. Even that's going to be a problem. Kuponim, we spoke about a person having issues with Gaiva or self-esteem. So in the world of therapy, so they more like want to talk to you about it and see where is it coming from. And it seems like in the world of the in the Olam of Musar or Yiddishkeit, they just kind of like shut it down, it's terrible, and like and don't have it. So how do you synthesize the two of them? And I think the Rosh Yeshiva was saying, if I understood correctly, that even in the world of Torah, for sure, we try to understand the Shayrish. Now, we're saying it's a bad thing, but how do you get rid of it? You don't just try to like stifle it. You do have to get to the shirish, get to the root. In the world of therapy, they get to the root through therapy. In the world of Torah, we try to like analyze it and try to get to the root also. But there's no question that it's important that we work on the what's at the cause of it. And for example, the Sefer Chovas Talmidim, we do speak about that, about Gaiva and what the cause of Gaiva is and where is it coming from and how to uproot it and different things. And all the Svarim, there really is a lot of depth. It doesn't necessarily speak about the avenue of therapy, but they're both really trying to get to the same place. And Rosh Yeshiva then said that nowadays we're not we've been taught by our Rebbeim, our Masorah, that we're not supposed to really try to get a Bachram not to have Gaiva. We try to direct the Gaiva towards Vayigba Libo Vidarki Hashem, which is a person should try to feel proud of his learning and try to feel proud about his accomplishments in his Yiddishkeit, not about being a good ball player, whatever it is, but not necessarily to try to get rid of his Gaiva, because as it is, you know, this is not necessarily the generation, being that I assume what we meant is that it's a little bit weaker, so we don't want to try to get, you know, we have enough problems with self-esteem that leave the gaiva in place, but it should try to get people that their gaiva should be about what they're accomplishing and what they're doing productive in their life in Avodas Hashem.
Okay, when davening and not getting answered, after davening, pouring your heart out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rosh Yeshiva stressed that first of all, that everything Hashem does is litova. It's not necessarily good right now, but it's leading towards something. This is a major theme in Derech Hashem of the Ramchal, which again was another push for the Derech Hashem, that a person has to realize that things that are happening in their life are moving towards some greater good, which they'll understand at a later point, and also to never come with tainus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and a person should never think that he would be able to do things better. HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his master plan is leading things to the place that they're supposed to go.
Okay, there's two more here, I think. We're going to try to do this as fast as we can. Rashiva spoke about Gehenna. We spoke about Gehenna. I asked the question to Rashiva, is Gehenna good? So then why are people like in Gehenna forever? Rashiva said there's two Gehennas. One Gehenna which brings you closer to Hashem, and that's for us. And that's 12 months of Gehenna. He said from the Ramban, there's another Gehenna which people can rot in Gehenna forever. And that's like Bilam and Titus and those people that Gemara says about them. Why is that good? For them it's not good. But again, it's for the greater good of the world that there should be a good and bad, and that's the system works better that way, therefore it's called considered good for creation, for society.
So I understand what the Russian was saying as far as like it's, you know, necessary for the rest of the world. But like what I didn't really understand was like the how, because it has nothing to do with us whatsoever. It's just that person's neshama just being punished.
It and does, because we need to know that, and that's all part of our understanding of what's going on. It's
part of our reality.
It's part of our reality.
That being over there on the left side over there is part of our reality.
He affected our world, and we see what the results of that is, and that helps for us to be able to have a balanced world. Last one in the weekend.
Rebbe, isn't everything created in this world good for the Klal and for the Yochid in every level?
According to the Rosh Yeshiva, no. That was the big Chiddush. That's what I understood from this answer. It was a phenomenal Chiddush.
Yeah. Sinner for Leah.
Yeah, so what was the answer for that?
The answer was it wasn't real sinner. He was just living complete. I have one. He had a claim about the she. You can just close here.
Okay, I'd rather just skip this one.
No, this can just close.
Oh, okay. I just want to stress one thing that I personally pride myself on Shimush Chachamim. And Shimush Chachamim for me has been isolated small conversations with Gedolei Yisrael that over the course of my lifetime have become a real treasure for me. What you guys got and what I got from being part of this is like a high octane session of Shimush Chachamim that would be the envy of great men in this generation. And it's really chashuv that we went over this, because these are things you can carry with you life. You are primary sources of the Masorah of Klal Yisrael. If you're in a room with Rav David Cohn and he gives you an answer, this is something you can tell your grandchildren with absolute certainty, that this is a representation of the Masorah all the way to from Har Sinai to our generation.
Thank you all for listening. Our boys, next week, Chovas Talmidim, back again.
The first question. I don't recall so much.
Oh,
Carson.